Good afternoon, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Fall is the time for going back to school. Elementary, high school, and college students all crack the books about this time. But not everything people want to learn happens in formal settings, and we don't stop wanting to learn after school is over. So today's program is a look at local opportunities to keep on learning and feeding our own innate curiosity about the world around us, whether that is making things, studying things, exploring in the natural world, or discussing literature or science. Today, we'll explore this community drive to learn with three different guests. In the studio with me, I have two guests. I have John Moriarty from Folk Skills. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here. Yeah. We've been trying to get you in here for a while. We also have Penny Cortez. She's with the Curriculum Committee at the Opportunities for Lifelong Learning, or OLE. Lifelong Education. Or OLE. I always do that wrong. And then in a moment here, we actually have Betsy Smith on the phone with us from the Northern Susitna Institute in Talkeetna that has an Alaska folk school. Hi, Betsy.
Good afternoon.
So glad that you could join us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
So I wanted to kind of get started. Well, first I want to let folks know that we welcome, if you've taken a class or there's a class you would love to take here in Anchorage or in Talkeetna or in Homer or in Fairbanks, because there are folk schools all over our state, we'd love to hear from you. And if you're in Anchorage, we welcome your call at 550-8433, or statewide, you can give us a call at 1-888-353-5752. And we also welcome your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And last little point of order, we do have on the Alaska Public website under Hometown Alaska, I have the websites for these organizations that we're talking to today. So if you can't remember what their website is, if you stop at alaskapublic.org, you can click right through and explore these organizations yourself. So anyway, I told the guests as we were sitting here getting ready that I've always loved the idea of community resources for learning. And when I first came to Anchorage, there were community schools. There was an elementary school near me. And in the fall and in the spring, I would get a little newsprint catalog that would, in it. To be truthful, I didn't take that many classes because I was working full time and had kids. So it didn't really work out. And then I think probably through funding, those kinds of things are not sustainable. But curiosity continues and people still want to learn. And it got me to thinking back in my college days when there were the Foxfire books, which were a lot of do-it-yourself kind of skill sets for going back to the land. And I looked that up a little bit I didn't know if it was one book or what. And I found out that it began in 1966 at a school where this class was going into Appalachia and interviewing people that had skills and gathering oral history. And it was so valuable that it became a magazine and eventually became a book series. Mm-hmm. And I think the first book came out in 72 and the last one, from what I could learn, came out in 2004. So it has persisted as, and I haven't read all the books, but I remember thinking, oh, I want that. I mm-hmm. want to know those things. The other thing it reminded me of was the Whole Earth Catalog with Stuart Brand. And again, it's that do-it-yourselfism that was part of it. And they had this idea that their book was going to be access to tools. And I think it taps into some of the same idea that, what can I do? What can I make? Or what can I know about the world close in? So one more little piece of trivia, I guess you could say, folk school trivia, was that I found that there was, I think, the original folk school in North Carolina, again, around the Appalachian Mountains, working to nurture and preserve folk arts. And that's the John C. Campbell Folk School. So folk schools have been around for a while. I also learned that Homer has a folk school, Fairbanks has a folk school. And I know that OLE isn't exactly the same thing as a folk school, so we'll talk about that during the show. So sure. Why don't we go ahead and start with you, Penny. How did you get interested in this whole idea of lifelong learning?
Well, the OLE program, as we call it, Opportunities for Lifelong Education, was started by a group of friends and neighbors in Anchorage 10 years ago. And they just decided that there were things that they'd love to learn. And they got together and formed this nonprofit organization called Olay. And in that first year, they had a small number of classes. And it was just word of mouth, getting people.
Were you just meeting in each other's living rooms? Or
We made an arrangement with the University of Alaska. And ever since then, for these past 10 years, the university has allowed us to use their classroom space on Fridays, because there aren't regular classes going on at the university. And on Fridays, there's free parking on the campus.
Whoa.
So those Major were benefit. Two very important requirements.
Uh-huh.
So we have this partnership with the university. Although the Olay classes, they are not for credit. You don't enroll in the university. And there's no homework. There's no tests.
No grades.
And no grades. And a lot of our instructors are current or former faculty of UAA, and they do it out of their love of learning and teaching, because we don't have money to pay our instructors, so mm-hmm. they volunteer their time to teach classes for us.
Now, this is your 10th anniversary this year.
Yes. I personally have been involved about 8 years. Mm-hmm. I started just by hearing word of mouth, asking about it. I think I suggested to somebody that I had an idea for a class, and, you know, once you pop your head up and say, well, I could volunteer to do something.
There's lots of jobs.
Oh, there's lots to do. So our organization is all volunteer run. We have a board of about 14 members on the board. And we are very much doing the work of organizing the classes. We now have a part-time contractor who's going to be our member support person. And we welcome her on board, Barbara Brown.
I saw that in your newsletter.
Beginning.
Yeah,
yes.
Barbara Brown is one of our community assets here. She's
Absolutely.
Been all over this community.
Well,
doing
she's
going
to be a big asset to Olay as well.
Right.
But as far as how Olay works, it works on a membership basis. So people can join up. The membership is an annual fee of $150. And for that $150, you can take as many courses as you have time in your schedule, as long as there's room in the course. And we are operating during three terms, the fall, winter, and spring. And each term, we are offering between 25 and 35 courses. So over a year's period, you have access to taking almost 100 courses for no fee for your $150 membership.
Wow. How big is your membership body?
We have about 400 active members right now.
Wow, wow.
And that's grown from, you know, just a handful of people.
Of neighbors.
10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember what your first class is that you suggested or that you took?
No.
There's been too many in between.
Yeah. Right.
Well, let me jump to Betsy on the phone. Hi, Betsy. Can you hear me fine?
Yes.
Oh, good. Tell me a little bit about how you got interested. I know you're the executive director for the Northern Susitna Institute. And within that, it looks like from your website, you have the Alaska Folk School. So tell me a little bit about your involvement there at the Institute and what the Folk School means for you guys.
Sure. So I've been with Northern Susitna Institute just about 3 years now. The program began in 2010, so I'm about halfway into the history of it. But the Northern Susitna Institute was formed by a number of founders that were really passionate about filling educational gaps in the Upper Susitna Valley. So we do a lot more than just the Alaska Folk School. And originally, we were set up as an umbrella organization. So we housed the Alaska Folk School program. We have a program for youth that we call Wild Wonders now, and that's focused on outdoor education, primarily during the summertime. And we've slowly been kind of evolving away from an umbrella model and just becoming an education program. But we kind of have a nostalgic attachment to the Alaska Folk School name, so we use that for that program. But some of our programs focus on the Alaska Folk School model, where we're working with primarily adults, older adults, and then sometimes intergenerational groups. We have parent and child pairs that will show up for some of our classes. So we'll see a range of different people coming through for those classes. We have lots of other things happening, too, throughout the year. I mentioned the Wild Wonders program, which is probably our most successful program that we offer throughout the summer.
Is that some kind of camp?
It's outdoor education, and then we also embed leadership development into those week-long sessions. So our younger kids come for a day camp program, and the older kids kind of graduate into doing overnights, and then our oldest kids do a week-long rafting program on the Tulitna.
Hmm. Well, it's pretty, you're doing a lot, and different age groups, and it's not all, it's skill-based, but it's not all in a classroom or in a workshop. It's out in nature, it sounds like.
Yeah, and almost everything that we do is hands-on in some form or another. So it might be outdoors, it might be indoors, but we really try and embed experiential education into most everything that we do.
Mm-hmm. You know, Betsy, I know you may not be teaching any of these classes, but I looked at the website under Alaska Folk Schools Northern Susitna Institute, and there's field sketching, I saw that. I saw earthen plaster-based coats, which I have to say, what is that? And earthen finish plasters. And then rocket mass heaters. What are those classes?
We're in the middle of a renovation project. We acquired a property that's right in downtown Talkeetna, and at the back end of the property we have sort of an old garage that we've slowly been renovating, and we're using natural building techniques to finish it. So the two courses that you referenced, the base plaster, earthen base plasters, and then the finish base or finished plaster. those classes are working on insulating the building using straw and minerals to create the insulation, and then we've been adding earthen plaster over the top of it, and that's finished now. So on August 9th, we'll be doing a finished plaster, and we have a relationship with a couple of people that are based out of Homer that have been helping us with this project and are great instructors. Hmm. And they will be doing some interesting techniques on the interior of that workshop and creating it a pretty inspiring space. That's what we're hoping for.
And tell me, what is the rocket mass heater class? have to know.
The rocket mass heater is a heater that's designed to burn wood heat, but then use that heat efficiently, and that heat is piped through another plaster encrusted bench before it leaves the building. So that bench heats up, and it retains that heat.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a while. And
right. That
was one of our first Alaska Folk School programs that we offered several years ago, and we'll be doing sort of a revisit of that September 14th and 15th.
Hmm. So would you say you mostly serve people in the Talkeetna area, or do you ever have a one-week class where you have people coming up from Anchorage or coming down from Fairbanks, or is it mostly local folks and what they want to learn and what they need to know?
It's mostly local folks for quite a few of our programs. The Alaska Folk School programs, though, they draw in people from throughout the South Central. So we do see quite a few people come through just for that reason, mm-hmm. and we try and adjust our schedules so that you can easily come and have a weekend experience rather than taking time off of work.
I see. And you're not affiliated with the Homer Folk School or the Folk School of Fairbanks?
No formal affiliation, just some
friendly informal conversation. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me move over to John Moriarty from Folk Skills, which is I found out about him by reading about him in the Alaska Dispatch News last year, and again, it rang my bell about folk schools, and of course, his website is called Folk Skills. So tell us a little bit, John, how you got engaged with this, and a little bit about your model.
Yeah, absolutely. I first ran into folk schools, one in Wisconsin. I lived there for a little while after college, and just kind of took a couple classes.
Folk school?
At this folk school in Wisconsin, yeah, called the Driftless Folk School.
Driftless.
And I did one on, cheese making, a kind of basic carpentry class, I think a banjo thing. And I just loved them. So I kind of fell in love with the model there. And one of the things that really excites me about it is the way that it can preserve regional character as well. You know, there are tons of skills kind of from a lot of different angles that fit under the sort of folk school model, and are all things that I'm trying to get started at going at folk skills. But I grew up in South Florida, actually.
Wow, you've been all over.
Yeah.
South Florida, Wisconsin, now Alaska.
Yeah, and it was that actually that kind of hooked me really on the regional character thing. Florida has this really distinct character as a state. It's very different from other states, both sort of as it was 100 years ago and as it is now, mm-hmm. with the amount of immigration it has from the Caribbean and from South America, things like that. And the thing that breaks my heart about it is that people there don't seem to really embrace it. They don't want to sort of thrive in the ways that place is different. And that's one of the things I love about Alaska, is that everyone in Alaska, you know, jumps on these things that are perceived as distinctly Alaskan, that, you know, everyone fishes, everyone, you mm-hmm. know, hunts or whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
just about, or hikes.
Kids like mush in school, you know, like it's kind of an absurd thing. Yeah. These like coming from the outside. So those were kind of things that I really appreciate about places and kind of something I just would like to try to preserve.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start Folk Skills? It's about a year old or two?
Yeah, just about a year old. So we started kind of late last spring, and the summers have been last summer and then this summer have been kind of quiet times because everyone is so engaged with
State. Yeah, nobody's home.
Which is awesome.
No time for classes in the summer. Yeah.
But we've had, just been growing and had some success over last winter.
You're on the web at Folk Skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not affiliated, say, with the university, so you don't have university space. Tell me a little bit about, and we'll go through all of you and find out mm-hmm. how you find your teachers and
sure.
how you find your space.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Folk Skills model is a pretty different one. On the surface, it's very much the kind of folk school model that, you know, the Northern Sioux Citizen Institute and the Folk
Homer.
School in Fairbanks and Homer. These kind of classic folk schools, that's our subject matter focus. Classes are really hands-on, right? Whereas it seems like Olay has all these really cool classes that are kind of more academic, maybe.
yes.
And, mm-hmm. And so very much, you know, hands-on classes are kind of the core
workshops.
Of it.
Workshops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then where Folk Skills as an organization diverges is it's a lot more decentralized than a lot of other folk schools. So most folk schools are nonprofit organizations that usually have a physical location themselves and some kind of staff, whether those are volunteers or hired staff who kind of put together the catalog and manage funds and kind of all that stuff. Folk Skills was imitating the Airbnb model a little bit.
Interesting.
In that the website exists and teachers who have something to teach or people who, you know, who have skills to share can post the class on the site. They set the class cost, the amount that students pay, and they're responsible for finding a location, although we can definitely help with that, and we communicate with teachers about trying to set up good places. But a lot of classes are in the teacher's home, or, you know, we've had these mushroom classes recently this fall, or late summer. Not fall yet.
Yeah,
no snow yet. So those classes, of course, have been out in parks and, you know, out in nature. It's a more decentralized model, and that has some real awesome bonuses, and it has some real serious drawbacks. You know, the real downside that we don't have this physical location to offer people, mm-hmm. and for some people that's a real
They need that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a deal breaker, kind of.
Yeah.
The upside is, because our costs are so low, because we are kind of decentralized like that, a lot more of the, or really all, essentially, of the class costs that the students pay go into the pockets of the teachers who are actually, you know, providing the
teaching,
the instruction. So that's a really awesome thing.
Do you take some percentage to keep your website going or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, just like Airbnb, kind of, the student sets, or the teacher rather, says how much they want to make per student. And FolkSkills adds a percentage onto that. That is an additional amount that the student pays. And that goes between 4 and 12% based on how expensive the class is. So as the class gets more expensive, the percentage drops. And that, so that little additional fee FolkSkills keeps to run the website, and the rest the teacher gets.
Wow,
so
that's
if you, so these mushroom classes that we've had recently, the teacher, Kristen Anderson, who's knows more about mushrooms than, you know,
most anybody.
Yeah, than you will ever know and never forget. She set, those classes have been awesome, and she set those at $20, and students see and pay $23 on the website. So FolkSkills ends up making $3 in that case, and she's making the rest.
So it's not massively profit-driven at all.
No, not at all. It's yeah, it's an interesting point.
You have an outside job, I take it, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, FolkSkills has been
a labor of love.
Comfortably in the red for a long time,
yeah,
you can say.
Comfortably in the red.
But yeah, the hope, though, was that if this model could be made to work in this community, it could expand into other communities and really, yeah, just be really scalable.
Yeah. So you mean throughout Alaska or throughout the 50 states?
Eventually throughout the United States, yeah. Is that very likely? Probably not. I think it's probably going to be an Alaska thing, and I think more specifically it'll probably be an Anchorage thing in that Anchorage doesn't have an existing folk school. So we're kind of just filling that niche, and if that's the only place it ever goes, I'm totally happy with that.
You're fine with that. Well, I just want to let folks know this is Hometown Alaska, and we're speaking with folks in town who offer lifelong learning or do-it-yourself kind of classes or kind of natural history, how to learn more about the community you live in. We have John Moriarty from FolkSkills. You just heard John talking. Penny Cortez from Olay, Opportunities for Lifelong Education, which has been around for 10 years. They're having their anniversary this year.
That's right.
And then we also have Betsy Smith on the phone from the Northern Susitna Institute, Alaska Folk School. I'm going to throw out our phone numbers for folks, 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752. That's statewide, or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Penny, I just wanted to jump to you and ask you a little bit about where you find your teachers. Like, John's teachers find the website. They sort of, I want to teach mushroom identification or, you know, I think you've got one on Flower crowns coming up. What about your teachers? Where do you get your teachers?
Well, we have a curriculum committee that's made up of volunteers, members of the board.
And Penny.
And me. And we, for each of the three terms, and also for some of the activities in the summer, we go out, we get an idea. Either it's an idea that comes to us from a member who suggests, oh, I'd love to have a course on such and such, or it's something that we've thought of ourselves. Occasionally, we have people who come to us and say, I would like to teach a course on such and such. And we have a number of wonderful volunteer instructors who will teach courses repeatedly, not the same course, but in the same field, like a literature course. And it'll be a different aspect of literature. We have Wayne Mergler, who is a retired East High School teacher of literature and a Dickens expert, and he's taught many classes
local
for us.
Dickens expert. Okay,
yeah.
I like that.
So that's how we come up with the ideas, and then we work to recruit the instructors, and that gets more challenging. And a number of our courses, I should mention that courses are usually 8 weeks or 8 sessions long, meeting once a week for a 75-minute session. And sometimes we have a course that's just 4 weeks long. And in the fall, we have 8 weeks of the term. In the winter, we have 8 weeks. And in the spring, we go for just 4 weeks. So the length of the course may vary. Mm-hmm. And some courses are taught for like 8 sessions or 4 sessions by the same instructor. It's like a college course on mm-hmm. literature or on science or something. Sometimes the courses are facilitated by someone, and then there are guest speakers for each of the sessions. So, for instance, coming up in the fall, we have this wonderful series about our national parks in Alaska. We did this in a previous term, and in each week there's somebody from the National Park Service who comes and talks about one of the national parks or preserve in our state.
Amazing.
And they're fantastic. So that's how we come up with
and
these.
And sometimes, like if people from the Park Service are coming, they actually have a job somewhere. They're yes. talking about something they know.
Oh, there's so much expertise in this state.
Yeah.
Whether it's the National Park Service or it's a state agency
right.
or another federal organization mm-hmm. or, of course, in the university, that there's just amazing talent and they've all got such interesting things to teach us.
Mm-hmm. I think before the show, you and I were chatting, and I think you told me that although your instructors volunteer their time, they do mm-hmm. have some access to classes is that routine or not? If they're an instructor, can they take a class?
Well, I don't know if this is great incentive for people to teach for us, but if you've taught a class for us that's 4 or more sessions long, then you are offered to come and take a class with Ole, any other class that you would like to, or you can give a certificate to somebody else to take a class as a thank you
mm-hmm.
and without becoming a member.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll reiterate again, Ole works on a membership basis.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody's out there that's interested, you can check it out on our website, which is Ole Anchorage, all lowercase, oleanchorage.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there you can see information about the courses that are coming up starting in September. And about how to register for classes, how to become a member. We also have instituted an introductory membership. If you have never been an Ole member and you would like to come and check it out, but you're not sure you want to plunk down $150 and commit for a whole year, you can take one of these introductory memberships for $50 and tell us what term you want to use that for, and then you can take as many courses as you want during that one term.
I see.
So it's a way of kind of easing into it and seeing if it's something that
if
you would like.
If you enjoy it, or mm-hmm. do you start getting nightmares of going back to school and homework?
Well,
and
like we say, there's no homework, there's no tests. The only time there are assignments is if understandably, you're taking a literature course, and it's about reading.
You do have to
books.
Read the book. Right?
Well, you don't have to, but you get a lot more out of it if you
it
do.
You'll enjoy it more, right.
That's right.
That's great. Well, we're going to take a tiny little break. Betsy, I'm going to come back to you and talk to you about where you get your teachers after we take a little break. We've been talking to John Moriarty from Folk Skills, Penny Cortez from Ole, and Betsy Smith from Northern Sioux Sittna Institute. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we're talking about community education, the chance to keep on learning even when you're not in school anymore. That could be the folk skills movement, which we talked a little bit about in the first half hour, really kind of a historical and traditional school to learn things like folk skills, I guess you could say, or useful skills. But we're also talking about Ole, which really is less skill-based and more world exploratory. all kinds of things like that. So we were just going around talking to each one here, asking where they get their teachers. And Betsy on the line from Talkeetna with the Northern Sioux Citizen Institute, I was just wondering, is there anything you can contribute there on how you find your teachers or even how you decide what classes to teach?
Sure. We kind of use some small town methods in Talkeetna to find teachers. For the Alaska Folk School specifically, we just do a lot of listening and talking and trying to vet people by, talking to more than one person about a potential instructor. So we get good ideas from people that live in town and they have interactions with potential teachers. Sometimes bring in people from outside of town, and it's a lot of talking to them and other people about their instructional style, because a lot of people can be experts but not necessarily great teachers. So
right.
We really try hard to vet that piece.
Mm-hmm.
Choosing classes, we also look at what classes have been successful in the past. We're more than likely to fill those. We tend to lean towards art classes and sustainable living when we think about which ones are successful.
Hmm. And art classes and give me an idea of sustainable living. Is that gardening or keeping chickens or what is that?
So the earth and plaster classes that I mentioned, those are some examples. So how to construct things that you can use at home. And then also wild crafting. We've had success with Devil's Club ointments and balms classes. We also had quite a bit of interest in mushroom classes that we've had in the past.
Seems like a popular one around the state.
Yeah. Especially this month.
Yeah. Do you have a membership model like Olay, or are people come in just for the class? How does it work for you?
We are not membership based, so each person selects the individual class that they want to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, in addition to searching out for our Alaska Folk School teachers, we use a number of other methods too. For our other programs, and one of that is just flat-out hiring summer staff to work with our youth.
Mm-hmm.
And then often we'll be approached by people that have ideas for classes, and they might not fit into the folk school model that we have in mind, so we will still take them in.
Well, give me an example of something that you have done that wasn't quite in the folk school model, but maybe worked out fine anyway.
Sure. So without using the folk school label on it, we've offered classes for preparing for afterlife decisions.
Oh, wow.
And we've had a three-day writing course that's happened. So we're still able to offer those classes, but we just label them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then for things that we don't have the time and energy to get involved with, because it takes a lot to market a class and to put it together, we're fortunate that we also have space. So we offer rentals for a number of different community groups to come in and do their own thing.
Do you pay your teachers, Betsy, in your folk school?
Yes, and we work that out with each individual teacher, but it tends to be a split. Mm-hmm. Similar to what John was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And our course fees cover their costs and a slight bit extra for us, but it's not covering the cost of the facility or any of our staff that we pay mm-hmm. on a year-round basis.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a question about how you let people know what you have. Like in John's case, I'll go around and let each of you talk about it. Certainly in Olay's case, you have a semester beginning, and so you have an online PDF that, and I don't know whether you print that out anywhere and make that available or not, or
yes,
is it just online?
There's a course catalog that comes out for each of the three terms, so three times a year. But the majority of our members sign up and register for classes online on that olayanchorage.org website. And that, if you go online, you don't have to be a member in order to look at what are the courses that are being offered. There's a place where you can download or look at the printed PDF mm-hmm. catalog, and you've seen that. Or you can look at the classes as they're listed online mm-hmm. and get the course description and the time and place and everything.
Right, right.
So it's very easy, and you can also join, pay your membership fee with a credit card online
as well.
And
then do you get emails that remind you of things? Or if you sign up for a class, you get an email that now, I mean, I just wonder.
We use a blast email function for people who have signed up for a course if there are particular notices that we need to send out. We are also able to post online on our website materials that instructors bring to the course and want you to have access to. Or a lot of times instructors allow us to use their slide presentations and post them with the course materials. So if you've missed a class, you
can
go onto the website and look at the materials
That's
well.
Right. Yeah. Let me ask you, John, you don't necessarily have a semester thing going.
Right.
Do you just expect people to come to your website and just check you out and see what's going on?
Yeah, the hope is to kind of just keep on working to building this sort of community around these kinds of skills and this kind of learning mm-hmm. In Anchorage. So yeah, we have we mostly promote through social media. And then folks who are already connected. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty active Facebook and Instagram, both just at Folk Skills. And then, yeah, folks who do choose to, you know, sign up for a newsletter, we have a very occasional.
when the spirit moves you.
Yeah. Yeah. When there are kind of enough classes in the docket to warrant an email, sometimes we'll send one out about that. But mostly.
So mostly social media.
Yep.
Do you guys do social media, Penny?
I was just thinking about there are some generational differences.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just ask Betsy. Betsy, how do you let people know? And then we'll talk about the different audiences you're trying to serve. Betsy, how do people know when it's time to check in and find out what classes are offered at your folk school?
Our website is the most current information that we have. I try and keep all of the course information up to date. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a mailing list that we try and use, just like John. So that's a good way to find out about things, too. And then being in a smaller location, we use the post office bulletin board.
Word of mouth. At the coffee shop. Yeah, it's a smaller community. Right. Okay, let's talk to each one of you. Let me throw out the phone numbers one more time and remind folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking about folk schools and lifelong learning. We have John Moriarty from Folk Skills with us and Penny Cordes from Olay here in the studio. And on the line, we have Betsy Smith from the Northern Susitna Institute, which often offers classes on weekends so folks from South Central can participate. You don't necessarily have to be a Talkeetna resident to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. The numbers are 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Now, what I wanted to do was hear each of you, and I'll start with John. When you imagine your audience, your target audience that you're going for, who is it? Do you actually picture a demographic, or it could be any age, but it's really the interest that defines that audience? Help us out with...
Right. Yeah, really, we're pretty broad. Our students have tended to be adults, but... That's, you know, we certainly...
Young adults or older adults or a mix of adults?
A mix, really, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've had... basically I think one class, which is a really cool one on making leather belts that was taught by Mikey Huff, a leather worker in Anchorage. That one was probably entirely people in their early 20s. But other than that, it's been pretty...
Like your mushroom class, would you say that was the one that you had already?
Yeah, very diverse mm-hmm. In terms of age.
Yeah.
And we've definitely had classes with, I think like Betsy said, you know, parent-kid combinations come mm-hmm. in. And I'd really like to see some classes also that are even specifically targeted at kids. You mm-hmm. know, I think, a carpentry class, for example, could be a little bit intimidating for someone to bring their kids to, but kids can be learning carpentry. You know, it just maybe involves a little bit more tailoring.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah. And how about you, Penny? Let's talk about your audience. Who are you aiming your your classes for. And you are less skills-based, maybe.
Yes. So yeah. I'm looking at the back of my business card for Olay, and it says intellectually stimulating courses designed for people over 50.
So there you go.
That's a big distinction.
Yeah.
And there's not an age requirement, but we do gear it to adults and older adults, and they're mostly classroom-based. They're all during the day. We have different venues Monday through Friday, and Friday, as I mentioned, at the university, Wednesdays at the Wells Fargo building in the Alaska Heritage Museum. Northern Lights and C Street. We have a wonderful classroom in their beautiful library space every Wednesday. So, and we're trying to very deliberately not offer, replicate things that are otherwise available in the community, like arts and crafts and a lot of the skills building things that you have. We have those once in a while, but it usually has a kind of an academic slant to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a course on painting, but it was more about learning about the painters and the styles of painting and then try your hand at it rather than here's how to do pastel
class.
Drawings
yeah.
or something like
uh-huh.
that.
Yeah.
And so,
you know, I wanted
it's more academic.
I was thinking about when I was looking at what everybody offers, I actually pulled out some from yours because you have a lot that you're offering because you're just about to launch. But there were things like cinema, the golden age of comedy, pioneers of African-American cinema, two film
yes.
courses
mm-hmm.
that you mentioned, the Alaska National Parks. But then there's another one all about Bristol Bay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You both, John, I'm looking at John, and I don't know if you do this, Betsy, or not, but you do some field trips, and John just had a mushroom walking, you know. So I noticed that Olay has a trip to the port, a field trip.
Yeah, we've just in the last, maybe 2 years now, we've instituted things called hikes and trips, largely based on the interest of our membership. And so when we do a hike, it's not just again, it has a learning component. So if we do a hike, there's the botanist along or the geologist along who is, and that's the theme of the hike.
Mm-hmm.
When we do a trip, we've done a trip to Fairbanks to the ice sculptures and going out on the base to see something military related that I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But and then coming up is this Port of Anchorage
mm-hmm.
tour.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and let's see, there's another, I think, field trip sort of thing, mm-hmm. the Alaska Native Medical Center Heritage Art Collection.
Yes.
Will you have sort of an expert along with you
yes.
on that?
Yes,
okay.
We have somebody that will guide people and show all the beautiful artwork that's available.
Huh.
Not available, but on display
uh-huh.
at the on the campus.
Wow.
One of the challenges for doing hikes and trips is that it often requires that we limit the number of enrollment for that. So we wind up with a big waiting list.
Uh-oh.
So we're trying to figure out how best to do that. And one of the things that we're going to try is this thing called shared interest groups, which will not be a formal Olay class, but for Olay members, volunteers can start up their own group. So they are starting a hiking group.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So different ways of doing things.
Yeah, so they're called SIPs, shared interest. No, SIGs.
Shared interest groups. So right now, and we're just trying this out, there's a photography one, and that's come out of a number of photography classes that using digital photography that have been taught by Chuck Iliff, who is a emeritus retired professor from UAA. And his loyal following of photography students wanted to continue
on.
They want more. There is now a photography SIG. And there's going to be this hiking one, and there's one on plein air painting.
Wow. Well, we have a caller, so I always like to get those calls in. I'd like to welcome Meg on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Meg.
Hi. I'm calling in. I run Anchorage Community House and actually know John pretty well with folk skills, and so I wanted to just let people know about our operation because we also offer classes for adults and children as a community learning opportunity.
Oh, give us some examples of what you've had.
This past week, we had indigo dyeing and jam making class, and tomorrow night we have a sold-out mozzarella and ricotta cheese making course, and then we'll be starting up with some yoga next week, and we've been having an ongoing gardening series through the summer, and then coming up September 9th, we host a STEM club once a month for kids, science, technology, engineering, and math. We do a K through 2 and a 3 through 6, so two different sessions on a Saturday to explore those topics with kids.
Well, I first read about you in the Alaska Dispatch News also, and I actually, I should add your website. What is your website, Meg? Or how do people learn? AnchorageCommunityHouse.com?
Yep, or we're on Facebook. That's probably most up-to-date, or Instagram, social media.
And do you seek out teachers, or teachers come to you?
We do a little bit of both, and then we also work, we're really responsive to what people want to learn, and if we can't identify a teacher, we do something called a Learn Together. So I'll do a little bit of research, and everyone brings their knowledge or ideas, and we just try it. And those courses are a lot of fun, and we always learn a lot. We're really focused on the process. I mean, hopefully the end product is fantastic, but the process of learning together and exchanging ideas is really important to us.
And just because we've asked everybody this, do you pay your teachers? Olay's teachers volunteer. John's teachers are paid. They set up the – how do you handle your teachers?
In pretty much all of those ways.
Some volunteers.
We partner with them sometimes. We have volunteers, and then we also have paid teachers who are coming with us, coming to us with a certain skill that they want to bring to the house, and we just negotiate on an individual basis.
Okay, so the best thing, you're probably on social media like Folk Skills is, so that's the best way for people to keep up with what your offerings are.
Yes, we have a very occasional newsletter as well, but it's very occasional.
It's a trend.
It's a trend.
In my generation, we're still stuck on paper.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why we're producing this newsletter, or this course catalog.
Yeah, still doing paper.
Yeah.
One more thing. In terms of your audience, Meg, it sounds a little bit like you're intergenerational, you know, families, but, I mean, do you think of your audience in a certain way, like we're really trying to have this kind of class? Or that? You do say that you're very focused on what you hear people want to have, so maybe you're more listening than, you know, deciding.
Yes, we're definitely listening. And we want to make sure our classes are all very accessible. So we offer out special codes or offers to, like, matches through Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So we're trying to make sure our offerings, you know, reach a large demographic, and that we can offer what we do to everyone, that it's fully accessible.
That's great. I'll make sure we add your website to our list. You know, we have Olay and we have Folk Skills and the Northern Sioux City Institute. We'll make sure yours gets added there. So if people are scouting around and want to know more, that's another opportunity. And of course, Facebook. People can find you on Facebook at Alaska Community House.
Anchorage Community House.
Okay, yes. Anchorage Community House. Thank you. Thanks a lot,
Thanks
Meg.
A lot.
I'm really glad you had a chance to call in. You've really got information for this this topic that was really useful to have. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Let's see. I wanted to go back to Betsy. Are you still there, Betsy, in Talkeena?
Yes.
Okay. We did kind of talk a little bit about your audience. You said sustainable living and maybe one other thing. Is there anything else you want to say about your audience that you're trying to serve out there?
I think you had asked about who we target for the Alaska Folk School, and Northern Sioux City in general, we try and target a continuum of learners from, you know, young childhood all the way to adulthood. And when we're looking at the Folk School, though, we hope for that, but we kind of plan for the adults that are roughly 50 and older, just knowing that they have a little bit more time and a little bit more income to be able to attend classes like ours.
Mm-hmm.
But over the next year or so, we're really going to be putting a little bit of effort into creating classes that parents and children or grandparents and children can attend together. We're pretty excited to be welcoming our first AmeriCorps member in just a couple of weeks, and that's one of the things that she'll be working on.
So she'll support a sort of form of support for your organization and putting on the classes and that sort of thing? She's not teaching.
She's going to be working primarily with teenage kids, and her biggest task is to work on after-school programming, but we've also asked her to work on intergenerational education as well. Mm-hmm. So that's where the Alaska Folk School model fits into her big picture.
All right. Well, I also wanted to ask this question of all three of our guests, which is, you know, the best class you've had, and what was, and if you, it's hard, I mean, Ole's had 10 years of classes, and John's had a year and a half maybe, and you guys have had 7 years, it sounds like. But I'm looking for sort of like the idea that took hold and was just amazing, maybe even was a surprise that people were that interested in it. And then the converse of that, something you thought was going to be just awesome and it wasn't. It didn't hit the right nerve. Everybody's looking at me with big question marks in their eyes. So, anything to offer there?
Yeah, John. I'll jump in. One of the ones that, to start with the second part of that question, one that I kind of thought was, oh my gosh, this one's going to sell out so fast, was smoking a canning salmon. And that class, every once in a while, a class doesn't get the registrations to move forward. And that class actually didn't. We didn't get the enough exposure, kind of, I guess. And that said, about 2 days after
you pulled the class.
We pulled the class. I got like 6 requests asking whether that class was happening. I was kind of like, well, if you signed up, you know.
It would have been.
But and then one that took me personally by surprise. I think. The teacher was kind of like, of course, I told you it would be great. We have right now posted this flower crown class. And Natasha Price, who teaches that class, offered that class last year, specifically with peonies, a peony flower crown class. And when she posted it, I thought, that's cool. Not what I expected at all. Mm-hmm. Because of expense costs and things like that, material costs, that class was a little pricier.
Peonies are pricey.
Yeah, and she opened it up to 15 or 20 students, and I kind of thought, ooh, okay, we'll see if this fills out. Sold out, like, faster than any of our other classes, and got spectacular reviews. I mean, everyone loved it. So I'm really excited that she's teaching it again, because there's an obvious demand for it.
Yeah, and we're at the sort of the end of the flower season, too. And do people have to bring their own flowers for that class? Or?
No, I believe she's providing all of that.
And it's not just peonies this time?
It's a general. She is integrating a lot of foraged Alaskan foliage, which is a really cool element of
it. Oh, yeah, neat.
She's a professional independent florist.
Oh, so interesting.
She's
okay.
Highly skilled.
Okay.
With that.
Yeah. Now, Benny, do you have flower arranging?
There is a flower arranging,
which is
class.
Kind of a little different.
This is a kind of the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah,
that we usually have more classroom based, though we do have a floral arrangement course coming up in September.
Huh.
And again, it has the limitation of she can only take a certain amount. I think it's open only to 15 participants.
Right.
So
right.
I'm maybe going to get a long waiting list.
Might have to become one of those SIGs.
Yes.
Shared interest groups.
Yeah. So when you ask about, you know, what are our most popular classes or the least, I can't think of a less popular one, except to say that there's this challenge when we do have something that restricts the room that's allowed, you know, 12 people can sign up, or
like
15
or
something. You know, that's something that we are struggling with because not because it's not popular; it's too popular. We get too many people, so we're trying to say, well, okay, if we have a small group to do a hike or a trip or a flower arranging class, can we have more than one section of it so you can sign up for section A, B, or C, so at least 45 people can be exposed to it. Then on the other side of the coin is what are the most popular or best attended or the ones we've gotten the great feedback for. I can't narrow it down to one because there have been a number of them, but I think what has been most popular are the ones that focus on Alaska, whether it's a current issue in Alaska or Alaska history. And again, we have such wonderful people that can tell. So we did one class that was very popular and very well attended, great feedback about the Pebble Mine. And this was a couple of years ago when it was more in the news. So we had 8 sessions, and we had John Shively, who was the CEO of Pebble Mine. We had representatives from Bristol Bay Native Corporation and environmentalists and the whole and state
Representative or geologists or
So and that was wonderful because it was a broad overview from many different perspectives mm-hmm. about this one issue. Then we've had classes about things like the Alaska Constitution. Retired Judge Karen Hunt facilitated a course on the Alaska Constitution. And here we have Vic Fisher, who can come in, who was one of the
constitutional drafters. Yeah.
Absolutely. And he can come in and talk about it.
Yeah.
So, again, we've had that. And then most recently, we did a course called Alaska Political History Through the Art of Peter Dunlop Scholl.
Mm.
Peter Dunlop Scholl was a editorial cartoonist for the Daily News and then the ADN for over 25 years. Mm. And we selected things from the archive of his cartoons and then came up with 8 different topics and then had a different person talking about that topic, whether that was about the oil spill, the Exxon Valdez oil spill, or a particular politician, or the ups and downs of oil revenues as it relates to the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful roundup of speakers.
Do you ever get people who want to do one side of the issue, and do you try to make sure you're not allowing an advocacy-only approach?
Yes, we try to, but we don't do the where we have two adversarial people speaking at the same uh-huh. on the same session.
Yeah.
So if it is a controversial thing, we try to bring in speakers who can speak from different perspectives on something, but not in some kind
in a debate
of one
format.
Not a debate format. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw that you have civil liberties issues in Alaska coming up.
Yes, that four people from speakers from the Anchorage, from the Alaska ACLU will be speaking.
And then Smoke-Filled Rooms, Alaska Politics.
With David Ramser, who was, gives us the insider perspective
right.
on being in the government.
Right. So you don't stay away from tense topics, but you sort of make sure that people get their day in court, so to speak.
Right. But we also have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We have The Dog's Mind coming up, a 4-session course on what's going
on. Who's teaching
on.
That? And how did that one come to be?
Well, there is a wonderful person in town who is a
who knows all about
dog psychologist. And blanking on his name.
But, I'm sorry.
You can look on our website, oleanchorage.org, and see the full range of courses that we're going to offer. We also do some fun things. We several times now we've done a course called Trivia for Our Generation. So it's a trivia game, and we're not asking about boy bands of the 80s. We're talking about our generation, music or art or politics or something.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're referencing questions that if you had taken so-and-so's class on history, you would have known that answer. So we're having fun, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also an interesting part of being a member of Olay and attending these courses is the opportunity to socialize with like-minded people and meet other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why having this classroom environment is very popular because people can get together and know each other.
Well, you guys, you hear the music, you know that means that the
thank
show
you so
is
much.
Over. I know Betsy said she had to dash, so she may be already gone. I don't know, but I'd like to thank our guests, John Moriarty from Folk Skills, Penny Cortez from Opportunities for Lifelong Education, Olay, and Betsy Smith from the Northern Susitna Institute, Alaska Folk School. And of course, we thank our listeners and anybody who called today. I'll be back next week as your host on Hometown Alaska. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Walden is our audio engineer today. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.